Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, by the way, if you're not doing anything next Tuesday night, Super Tuesday, how about joining me and our It's a Free Country Politics team for a Super Tuesday results watching party? This will be serious and we'll have fun. We'll have the Onion's digital director, Baratunde Thurston, who was such a hit on this program recently. We'll have free beer and snacks for all ticket holders. We'll watch the results come in from around the country on our TV monitors. Plus, Anna Sale and I will host a conversation about the horse race and about the issues. It'll be serious. It'll be fun. It'll be Super Tuesday night in the green space here at WNYC. So while you're on our website, hopefully making your pledge right now, go to the events page at WNYC.org and hope to see you on Super Tuesday night in the green space. Well, here on The Brian Lehrer Show, we've got our series going, The End of War, as many of you know. And what about the end of illness? Is illness an inevitable part of life? Is there a master switch, a way to prevent sickness, even prevent death? Well, maybe not that. But The End of Illness is the title of a new book from Dr. David Agus, an oncologist and professor of medicine and engineering at the University of South Carolina. And he joins me now. Dr. Agus, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm sorry. Did I say the University of South Carolina? You're at University of Southern California?
We're at University of Southern California, yes, in Los Angeles.
USC. The title of the book was actually a suggestion from Steve Jobs.
Steve certainly had a role in developing the title. He wanted it to be aggressive, declaratory, and really state something. My original title for the book was What is Health with a Question Mark, and he didn't like it.
What is health? What is health? Do you want to ask that question because you think we don't understand what health is?
I don't know what it is. Is it your cholesterol? Is it how you feel? Is it how you sleep? Is it how you look? Is it how long you live? Is it your quality of life? What is health? We don't have a marker for it.
You've stopped taking multivitamins. Let's jump into that example. And many of your colleagues have also stopped and no longer recommend it to their patients. Are you part of a vitamin backlash?
I wouldn't say a vitamin backlash, but I think a reality check is I want to look at everything and say, where's the data? 39,000 women studied over a period of 19 years. Women who took multivitamins or iron had a higher death rate of women who didn't. Men who take vitamin E for 3 years have 17% higher prostate cancer. And it lasts for 3-4 years after stopping the vitamin E. And I could keep going on. There were 63 randomized studies with more than 500 people with multivitamins, none of which had a benefit in heart disease or cancer. So the vitamin is just something the body can't synthesize. It doesn't mean more is better.
But are you suggesting that vitamin E and vitamin D cause cancer? I thought the latest research shows that vitamin D is one that there really is scientific evidence for the value of.
No. I mean, vitamin E clearly causes cancer. That was shown with a $200-plus million study from the government doing that. It was stopped midstream because of this increased incidence in cancer that was significant. Vitamin D, there's a lot of associations with diseases like heart disease and cancer and low vitamin D, but nobody yet has shown that actually giving vitamin D or taking vitamin D has any effect. In fact, if women over 70 take high-dose vitamin D, they increase their bone fracture rate by 26%. If women take calcium and vitamin D, and this is over 20,000 women, no effect on bone fracture rate. So, again, being low doesn't mean that giving the vitamin will actually help. In fact, the body is so regulated that if you give a dose of vitamin D, many times you downregulate the receptor and screw up the signaling because all we measure is the vitamin. We don't measure the receptor or any of the signaling molecules.
Listeners, any questions for Dr. David Agus, author of The End of Illness? And you can call in at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. That's our on-air line, not our pledge line, obviously. Won't ask you for money on the air during a pledge drive, 1-888-376. I started giving the pledge number. If you want to talk to David Agus on the air, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. This is part of a lot of the vitamin thing is one of a lot of rules that people have about their health and habits that people get into. People take vitamins increasingly. They eat fibrous vegetables, do complex yoga routines, read studies on antioxidant fruits and vegetables and what can be taken as anti-inflammatories. There's a sort of group of health think ideas out there. Do you think that most of these rules are wrong? Are you coming at this with an entirely different set of rules and behavior priorities?
Well, I mean, I come at it with looking at the human body as what we call a complex system. So correcting one node actually changes the whole system if you start to look at the data. And so we're very good at marketing our country. You call something an antioxidant and everybody takes it. There's no data that antioxidants actually help for preventing cancer, for example. All the data are, for example, if you take smokers or former smokers and put them on antioxidants, you increase the rate of lung cancer death by 20%. So, you know, we're very good at these terminologies, but when you start to look at the data, remember, I'm the same profession that 25 years ago said, take margarine, not butter, and think of what we did to people. And so I want to look at the data and say, listen, everything you take changes your complex system, maybe toward health or maybe away from health. And the only way we can know it now, we don't have simple metrics, is to look at the long-term randomized data. And so I'm saying go back to data. Go back to real food. It works.
Claire in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dr. David Agus. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering about my newborn. He's 4 months old and exclusively breastfed, and the pediatrician says he has to take vitamin D because it's the winter. So I just wondered what you thought about that.
Vitamin D as in dog because he's not getting enough sunshine?
That's right, yeah. But he's breastfed, so I don't... Well,
yeah. Dr. Agus?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no data that giving vitamin D to newborns has a benefit. I'm not saying it's harmful. I just don't know. And so, you know, historically, whenever we've made these guesses, we've been wrong. So for, you know, many years, we had children who were breastfed who didn't get vitamin D supplementation, and they did just fine. So I would argue don't take the risk and discuss again with your doctor and don't, you know, negate their what they say to do, but go back to him or her and say, where's the data that taking vitamin D will help my child? I want people to ask for the data.
Here's Philip in Brooklyn, also with a vitamin D question. This seems to be the hottest thing you've raised so far. Philip, hi.
Yes, hi. I was recently told by my doctor that I have insufficient vitamin D as in dog, and he gave me a supplement, and I'm wondering whether I should even bother. I mean, then
remember, 97% of African Americans, 82% of Caucasians are, quote, low in vitamin D. In fact, the country of Canada had to outlaw vitamin D testing because it was 11% of their health care budget a couple years ago. So we're all being diagnosed with this new epidemic. But remember, we're only measuring vitamin D. We're not measuring the receptor, and we're not measuring any of the signaling molecules. And so, first of all, calls into question, what's normal? I didn't come with an instruction manual saying what my normal vitamin D is. And I guarantee you, you don't have rickets, which is a lack of vitamin D. So the question to ask your doctor is, what's the significance of this? Show me data where being the vitamin D level I am and giving me vitamin D actually makes a difference.
And you know what's so interesting about these first two calls that we've gotten is that these aren't people who are citing alternative health books or, you know, people who are outside the mainstream. This is a woman with a newborn who got prescribed vitamin D for the baby by her pediatrician. Philip said his doctor said, you know, his regular doctor said he has a low vitamin D level. So why is there so much disagreement even in the mainstream?
Well, I'm not sure it's disagreement. It's just, you know, you got to go back to the data. And so I think when you go to your doctor and he or she, you know, draws all your lab, and I'm guilty as anybody else. I'm not blaming doctors. I'm one of them. And they say, listen, go home and come back in a year. You don't perceive value. But if they say, hey, I found something low, take this. You perceive value. They perceive value. And so I guess that's what's somewhat behind it. But I'm just saying go back and ask for the data. I want people to be empowered and say, listen, it may make sense to take this, but first tell me, show me data in a study with people like me that it actually had a benefit before I take a pill. Because believe it or not, vitamins are pills. They're the same as any other medicine.
Dr. David Agus, my guest on WNYC, oncologist, professor of medicine and engineering at USC in Southern California. So you're an oncologist, and you write about how studying cancer helps you study the entire body, a systemic approach to health. One of the things that I think a lot of mainstream medicine talks about that you do accept is that inflammation is something we should be looking more at, that inflammation stresses the body so much that it can create illness. What kind of inflammation are you talking about? Because I think the first thing people are going to think of is, you know, an inflamed joint or something from too much exercise.
Yeah, I mean, we all think of inflammation. You have a cut and it turns red and it's inflamed. Well, that same concept of inflammation holds true inside the body. inside the arteries, and that leads to heart disease and cancer. We know that from years of study. And we also know that if we can block that, we're going to delay both those diseases significantly. And so we have poor man's metrics in that we have a couple of metrics, one called C-reactive protein, that we can measure inflammation. My hope is over the next years we get better at measuring it. But we also have very effective ways at blocking it. One is just avoid it, right? If at the end of the day your feet hurt from walking in shoes, that's inflammation. I don't want you walking in those shoes.
Yeah, but that's just a local discomfort. If you're talking about inflammation as being a big systemic threat to the body, instead of taking a vitamin pill every day, should we all be taking ibuprofen?
Well, you know? But we know it's aspirin, for example. Ibuprofen's right. A little bit different, but aspirin, we know, low-dose aspirin, a baby aspirin a day for 20 years, decreases the rate of death of prostate cancer by 10%, breast cancer 15%, colon cancer 40%, esophageal cancer 60%. So these drugs work, and it also obviously decreases cardiovascular disease. So an aspirin a day clearly has benefits. I'm not saying everybody should be on it, but I want the discussion to happen with your doctor and say, listen, why shouldn't I be on an aspirin? The same is true with this class of drugs called statins. And so statins, of which Lipitor is a member, is a drug that we know now blocks inflammation. If you take people with normal cholesterol and put them on these drugs, you significantly delay heart attack and stroke and decrease the incidence of cancer. And so I'm not saying, again, everybody should be on these, but I want the discussions to happen. These things cost very minimal. You can get a 90-day supply of statins at Walmart without health insurance for $9. And so they cost little, and their effects on health can be dramatic in the right patients.
Ron in East Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how's it going? My original question kind of got sidetracked with all that. Initially, it started out with almost what I perceived as skepticism towards supplements, and then it went into almost like a sales pitch for, you know, simvastatin or something. And I'm wondering if doctors are not the absolute worst people to have speaking about the topics of nutrition and diet, because people really go there for a pill. I mean, they go there for a cure and take people's word as law when they go to see the doctor. And doctors seem to be very reductionist when it comes to news. I almost wish Marion Nestle was on right now, too, to to clarify some of this stuff.
Right. But, I don't know. Marion Nestle is not a big supporter of taking supplements either. She also says go back and eat real food. So actually, I think that we're having a conversation within mainstream medicine here, which is not to diss alternative medicine whatsoever. But this is also a conversation within mainstream medicine. This isn't just alternative versus the pharmaceutical companies, as I'm hearing it.
No, I'm all about food. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at real food, it's a remarkable thing. And I think the right food, and I think one of the keys is actually regularity and schedule. If you have your lunch today at noon and tomorrow at 2 o'clock, for 2 hours, your body shuts down to save energy expecting food. Your cognition goes down, your exercise performance goes down, and you actually gain weight because your metabolism goes down. Eat real food. Eat it regularly.
So your book is called The End of Illness.
Yeah.
Do you get sick?
Sure. I mean, and I think, you know, the key is, you know, preventing as much as you can. If you, you know, I get a flu shot every year. If you skip your flu shot this year and you get the flu, you're going to probably do fine. You'll have 5-6 days of significant inflammation. A decade from then now, that will manifest itself as higher heart disease and cancer. I think you have to focus as much as you can on this prevention strategy, because it'll pay off not just in the short run, but in the long run. Remember, evolution selects out for who has good kids. It doesn't select out for who lives till their 90s or 100. In order to get there, we need to optimize a little.
Dr. David Agus, oncologist at USC, and now the author of the book, The End of Illness, title suggested by Steve Jobs. So it is a little hyperbolic, isn't it? I mean, because there is no end of illness.
No, but remember, the 1950s was the last year you could die with the word old age on your death certificate. And now we have to have a cause. I died of prostate cancer. I died of lung cancer. I died of heart disease. I want to go back to, you know, organ shutdown in your 90s, where we're not in an ICU, we're not on a million medicines. We actually die with dignity. And I think we can delay or prevent most diseases with early detection, with preventive medicines. There's most things we can delay till our 9th or 10th decade.
All right. You've kicked up a lot of thinking. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.